Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I try to upload something to it once a week, sometimes once every other week. Just kind of depends upon how busy I am and what's going on in the kickboxing world. And also, the most efficient way to get the kickboxing podcast is just to go to the iTunes search engine, enter Warman Kickfighting Show, or enter Lord Gaul, which was my username back when I fell in love with the sport. K1 USA, K1 Fans, those were the big time fight forums when I first fell in love with the sport. So Lord Gaul was the name that I used when I was on those forums. So we're going to go ahead and get into the kickboxing action. Got a lot of stuff to talk about. And I mean a lot of stuff to talk about. So I'll go ahead and jump into the most recent event. K1 World Grand Prix went down this past Monday night with the 60kg World Tournament. And again is your champion, Koya Urobe. It was a fun tournament. I'll go ahead and get into all of it. I'll get into the importance, as I mentioned before in the show, of how I feel about stoppages, especially when you win like dominant performances and then a stoppage. But I'll go ahead and go through the tournament field. Won't go through all the fights on the whole card, but I'll get most of them. First of all, we'll go ahead and start off with just probably one of the oddest things you're going to ever experience. Tega defeats Javier Hernandez by second round TKO. Basically, what happened was, he drops Javier Hernandez to the body. It was a lever kick, I believe. And he continues to bash Javier throughout the round. Then Javier, who gets to the end, I can't remember if he got to the end of the round or not, but the moment Tega was like, you know, really having a series of offensive success, Javier Hernandez walks away. And they give him, yeah, it was during the action, it wasn't in between rounds. He walks away, so then they give him a standing eight. They're looking like they're about to give him a standing eight, but before they could even begin the count, he literally steps through the ropes and walks out of the ring and out of the venue. And the crowd erupts and goes crazy for Tega, but it's one of the most interesting things I've ever seen. Javier Hernandez, I'm not sure what would cause him to respond in that way. You could just go down to a knee and, you know, lose gracefully, you know. But to actually step out of the ring and escape, it's something that I can count on my hands how many times I've seen. I think in MMA, is it Dwayne Ludwig and Jens Pulver, where Jens Pulver steps out, like, I'm just taking too much, I got to get out of here. This was one of the rare times that I've seen this sort of thing happen. Forgive me if I'm wrong in that MMA analogy. I was just trying to think of a recall of a time that I'd seen it in, you know, the last 15 years. I know I've seen it before, but this one was pretty interesting. Now, most of the time when I've seen it, it's usually because they were upset with something. Jerome LeBanner comes to mind. Jerome LeBanner was upset with the decision and just dipped out. You know, I've heard that before. But this was like during the action, in the ring, upset, you know, or physically hurt, and just literally got out of the ropes and left the venue. You know, just walked right out. Tega moves on. Hirotaka Urobe gets a victory over Giannis Wolf. Hirotaka has had a rough year, and this fight was just, it foreshadowed what was going to happen. Hirotaka, as many low blows as you can get away with happened to Giannis Wolf. He went down, I want to say, like, it almost seemed like twice every round, and there was no point taken, to the best of my knowledge. He, you know, made it to the final bell, but, you know, people crack jokes about how he's going to be in trouble for quite some time. It was a rough night for him. But Hirotaka Urobe, I mean, he hasn't looked as stellar since the victory over Koya Urobe. And again, Koya was up when they fought in that fight. He was winning, as far as my cards are concerned. He was winning. But, you know, the big score, jumping knee, scores the down, and he was able to put it away after that. Since then, this year, they've, you know, given him single bouts in a lot of their fight cards, and it just hasn't come together the way that they thought it would. Koya Urobe then goes against Kareem Binoy. Of the quarterfinal fights, this one is probably the most legit because Kareem Binoy, the Frenchman, the product of Nasa KGM, who is, you know, he's a Muay Thai guy first, but he's fought international. He's fought against a lot of high-level guys, and they've used him before. He is one of the guys who gives credibility to this tournament because 60 kgs are 132 pounds. There are good, talented guys around the world. They just, not all of them have gotten the opportunity to get on these cards. And Kareem Benui is a guy who's got a lot of international resume and has fought, same as Javier Hernandez, who once upon a time was the It's Showtime champion. And, you know, when they had their, I believe theirs was 61 kgs. So Javier Hernandez, Johannes Wolf, Kareem Benui, they give a lot of credibility to this tournament field. Other than that, it's just, you know, set up for Japanese fighters. And it needs to be known that a lot of Japanese fighters are very, very talented in these particular weight classes and are very much deserved of being in those spots. Not all, but a lot of them are. And the reason why I bring that up is because for those of you who are familiar with the K1 World Grand Prix, they, for television purposes, had to always have a Japanese athlete in it. So the winner of the Japan tournament would get into the field no matter what. They wouldn't have to win at the elimination. If you won the Japan Grand Prix, you got into the World Grand Prix. And it was for TV that that happened. And some people were upset. They just wanted to always be, hey, this should just be a showcase for whoever is the best fighter in the world. They shouldn't have this bye. They shouldn't always have a Japanese guy in every, you know, regional tournament and so on. They were a TV show, and most people don't think about that. They did. They always just thought it was just the world's biggest competition, and they were playing favorites to the Japanese athletes. It wasn't the case at all. That connection that you were seeing between the athletes that got the opportunities wasn't so much because they wanted to make sure the system was rigged to only have so many people from, you know, Holland or so on into the tournament. The system was very much made because they had a TV show that was going on, and their audience is Japanese, and they wanted to make sure that there was someone on the fight card that could relate. So that's why you'd usually see all these international tournaments, and there'd be one Japanese representative on there. But I look at those tournaments as a whole, and clearly the better fighters were from Europe or from whoever won the championship that year, mostly Europeans. The Japan Grand Prix at 60 kgs, you look at, you know, 65 kgs is another example, 55 kgs, 57 is the one that they're going to do next. It has had very, very worthy Japanese opposition. Like, there are really talented fighters who go ahead and enter best in the world and put them against Koya Robe, and you're going to see he's going to prove his worth there in the kickboxing world. So Kareem Benui, Javier Hernandez, Johannes Wolf, somewhat, but really Hernandez and Benui had the kind of international resumes to give legitimacy to this tournament. So for Koya Arube to get the night started off with a 30-27 one-sided, you know, victory over Kareem Benui, who had moments and spots, but Koya Arube too slick with his boxing, too slick with his footwork, and not necessarily in terms of like really turning you with a whole bunch of angles, but always being in a spot where he can hit you, always being in a spot where you're overreaching and he's in prime position, always in a place where he decides to turn up the volume on his offense, he scores it successfully. So he doesn't necessarily play angles in a way where you're always turning and you're trying to find him. That's kind of more the defensive way of playing it. He would play angles in a way of the way he steps to the side, the way he lures you into traps, the way he can continuously play offense in front of you, and then work himself to a shoulder and put offense there. He has a good mix of his boxing into his kicks. He's always been a solid low kicker, but his boxing, which was his strength when I first, you know, noticed him on the scene back in those tournaments, those coaching tournaments, his boxing has clearly been the skill that has grown the most. We move on to the last quarterfinal fight, which was Kosuke Kimiyama as he defeats Paulo Tibar again, 30-28 on two scorecards, 29-28 in another one. Kimiyama was unfortunately injured after this, so Tibar moved forward. This was also important to the tournament field. The way this tournament was set up is we've got Japanese guy versus foreign guy, you know, Japanese versus the world in the quarterfinals. Now, again, they're hoping that, you know, a Japanese fighter moves on because, you know, as I mentioned before, it's a TV show. But it's never good for your brand that, you know, international recognition-wise, that everyone be Japanese, you know, in your finals. But this was a, you know, victory for Komiyama. The story clearly is that he was injured and he could not continue in this tournament. So Paula Tibar gets to move on. Going to go ahead and move on. We'll mention a couple of super fights. Makoto Hara, He gets a victory over Koichi Pettis. I've mentioned Koichi Pettis before, just a guy who they use on a regular basis, not a very talented fighter as far as I'm concerned, just a good solid name to put on cards, who, because people, you know, they were called Pettis from Nicholas Pettis, but this is just, and I think it's just more like a gym thing, but Koichi just gets these opportunities because of where he is. He is not an elite fighter. Makoto Uehara actually can beat a lot of really good guys. There's some guys in the Glory roster who he gives some trouble to. But, you know, he has been the lone big guy that they use on their tournaments here and there. So we'll see what happens in Makoto Uehara moving forward. But glad that he got the victory here. We got Kenta Hayashi. That was, let me see. He defeated Yuji Takeuchi, and that was KO in the first round. I had three knockdowns in that one, if I'm remembering correctly. Again, not the greatest of battle, and not the greatest of names there. Let me see, who else am I going to mention? I think I'll go one more super fight before I finish the tournament field up. Gandapar Warsarek was... he defeats Hideki Yamazaki. Yamazaki is a guy who's, he was the one, if I remember correctly, won a Japanese Grand Prix earlier in the year at 65 kgs. I believe that's the one that he beat Masaki Nori in, if I'm remembering correctly. Yamazaki is, it came out as an entertaining fight. Both guys went down in the first round, and then, you know, as the fight, you know, went on. You know, Yamazaki's always, to me, been game and looked good in spots. And there are some guys that he can beat and some guys that he can't beat. But he was, you know, down to perform. But the low kicks of Gandapar was the thing that was the separator. And then I think... I don't know what they're going to do with him moving forward, because Gandapar, of course, is 65 kgs, and we all know that that's where Ku reigns, Ku Fairtex, or whatever the gym that Ku Fairtex is at right now. But, you know, I'm curious what's going to happen to that moving forward. But, man, I like that he got this opportunity and really put the low kicks on Yamazaki. Go ahead and return to that tournament field. Semifinals, we had Koya Rube as he stops Paula Tabar in the, second round. It was two downs scored. Paula had already lost, and he only got to move on because he was, because the guy got injured. But to stop someone always means something to me. If you're better than a guy, get the guy out of there. Don't just be better than the guy and school the guy. Be better than the guy and get him out of there. So Koya Rube gets the stoppage there. And then Tega defeats Hirotaka Urabe. Unanimous decision. One of the scores was 30-26. The thing that I think about with this card is Tega is so... he's got all the athletic gifts. And there are times where I picked against him because I'm like... it's not that you're not a skilled guy who should be winning a lot of high-level kickboxing matches. It's not that you're not a good athlete, because you really are a good athlete. He just has some of the most interesting mental lapses in some of his performances for a guy that good. And sometimes I feel like he shoots for KOs, or he looks for a certain type of shot too long instead of just using his natural gifts in scoring kickboxing round fights, or winning kickboxing rounds. Hirotaka, who once upon a time was the KO, like, people don't know this, that when he first burst on the scene, he was just killing everybody with KOs at 60 kgs. Like, that's what you wanted to see. You wanted to see Hirotaka score a KO over somebody. He developed himself into a solid kickboxer, not to the skill set of what I'd say Koya Urobe was, but with his, you know, his KO stoppage power, his aggression, he had all the tools early on. But this has just been a rough year for him. At least when he lost to his brother last year, you could make the argument that, oh, it was in a tournament, you know what I'm saying? So he was slower by the time he got to the final round. And so you can always make that argument. But here, I just felt like he just got whooped by Tega, just got beaten in every possible way. There's no argument to be made for any of his offensive efforts in the fight, And I look over this past year and I go, man, it's looked this way all year. So I don't know what's going on, if it's training or if he's working through an injury or if it's something, you know, personal with, you know, sometimes that comes into play with jobs and girlfriends and all that kind of stuff, whatever. But he just not... He didn't look good at all, and Taiga absolutely schooled him. We go ahead and move to the final match of the card that I'm going to talk about, and that is Koya Arobe winning his second tournament in a row, if I remember correctly. Koya Arobe won the tournament last year by defeating his brother Hirotaka Arobe in the finals. But of course, you can make the argument there that Hirotaka had come in from, you know, it's a tournament, so he came in a little bit wounded. But even in that tournament, Koya Arobe was stopping people. And here goes my thing. In the last two tournaments, so in six fights, he's got four stoppages. And that's what you want from a guy who's going to be seen as the champion of your weight class to the world. You want to look at their resume and be like, hey, not only are they winning, they're putting people away. And that's what you have here. You've got Koya Arobe with a three knockdowns, just absolutely blitzes Taiga. And it's not, like I said, Taiga's a good athlete, good fighter, but he got in trouble and he stayed in trouble. And it's just, Koya is just the boxing, which is so good. He's always, you know, sat on his hands pretty good, but I felt like he got stronger, you know, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, 60 kgs. When he first burst on the scene, I think they had 63.5 was the weight class that K1 invented. But since then, you know, 60 kgs definitely been his home. He's strong there. He's got the skill. Got the interesting story. I just want to see what they do with him moving forward. This is the second tournament, you know, win in a row. Maybe they put him, you know, and some super fights down the road to kind of showcase his ability on some of the other tournaments. So they're going to do 57 kgs. That's a tournament that they're doing in early November, if I'm remembering correctly. So you got to get him on that card. You know, you got to get him on that card. This is my champion. He's got the belt on. Here he is going against blank. You know, go ahead and make that happen. So good stuff for Koya Arobe. Of course, you know, I'm, you know, super happy because I, you know, kind of said it as a joke, but I also mean it seriously. I fell in love with, you know, Koya Arobe because I first seen him when he was in the Koshin tournament. And he actually, if I'm remembering correctly, you know, he lost to Hiroya on the finals of the season that Hiroya won. But I was like, man, okay, this kid didn't have his best outing, but he's shown me something before. And then the first time he fought was on he wasn't in the tournament, but I had already been sold on his skill set. He got to fight in the 63.5 kg tournament, but as a single fight. And I remember thinking the best fighter in the card didn't get into this tournament. And he was really, really young at the time. So for him to blossom into what would be recognized as the 60 kg champion in kickboxing of the world, because K1's the only ones got the weight class, and they're the ones bringing in international people for the opportunity, it's just really, really cool to see. So I always crack the joke about my kids, and everybody knows Mom Barlow and Koya Arobe and Masaki Nori. I use the joke that they're my kids, and that's just because they're people who I followed since they were very, very young. And to see them, you know, Amon, who was number one, now number two in the world, but still right there winning on a very consistent basis. She could be number one again very soon. And then you got Koya Arobe, 60 kg champion. And you've got Masaki Nori, who's got, you know, big time victories, but came up short against the number. Masaki Nori is probably the clear number two fighter in the world in his weight class. So it's cool to see their success when you've been watching someone since they were 14, 15, you know, years old in some cases. So good job, Koya Arobe. I wish you all the best moving forward. We go to Bellator Kickboxing. Now I'm just going to go ahead and read the spoilers because the fights aren't going to be aired until Friday night. And for those of you who aren't familiar with who I am, what I do, I train high-level mixed martial arts for a living. I've got several people in the UFC, several high-level talents. You know, I work with pro boxers, pro kickboxers, but MMA guys are who I make my money from. And right now, one of my female fighters, her name is Jian Yu Frey, she is going to be fighting for the Invicta title on Friday night. So by the time I see this and get this episode to you guys, it won't... the results, I can revisit the card later, but I'm just going to kind of break down the results. I was definitely disappointed that I wasn't able to see the fights first, but for whatever reason, these fights happened on Saturday last week and are just now being shown on Friday this week. So if they had played them as normal, I would have been able to get this to you. Plus, they had a Bellator event last week, so normally they put this right after that, but I think there was a day of separation in the card, so such is life. Bellator middleweight title changes hands. Zoltan Lazak takes the title from Kareem Gaethje. Again, Gaethje, one of my favorite fighters, very talented. Just Zoltan, veteran guy, been in the game for a while. He was able to get the victory over 5 rounds. The title changes hands. I'm curious to see what they do with it moving forward. Zoltan's not a guy who, I would say this is a big win, you know, like he's not a guy who I'd be like, man, I knew this guy was going to be something down the road. Now, again, we still got to figure out what Bellator kickboxing is going to be down the road. But good win for him. And Kareem Gaethje, of course, super talented. Want to see him in anybody's fight card moving forward. Raymond Daniels gets a victory over Zolt Benedek. And what's the surprise here? 3-round decision. Raymond Daniels got a little bit tougher test this time. Just he got a more durable guy, and that's important because Raymond Daniels does need to work straight kickboxing, but he's such a great athlete that sometimes he can just land his flash and you're done, you know, because he's Raymond Daniels and you're not. So I was hoping that he'd get the kind of fight to give him the right kind of professional resistance so he can get himself back to fighting elite fighters. Now, again, I don't know who those elite fighters are going to be because they don't really have a huge core of guys at 70, you know, 170 pounds and, you know, the Bellator fight brand. Maybe he can fight, you know, Kareem Gaethje at the weight, or maybe he can fight Zoltan Lazak. I'm not sure what they're going to do with him. I don't know what his weight limits are, what he's trying to do. All I know is he's a really good athlete, despite the fact that he's an older guy. Good athlete. Athleticism has stayed there. Punches hard. Of course, we know about the spin, the flash, and the mix between, you know, karate, taekwondo, kickboxing, the way he's made it his own. Raymond Daniels is a lot of fun, so we'll see what happens with him moving forward. Denise Kilholtz is back in the winner's circle after beating Renata Lantos. And Lantos is, you know, again, serviceable girl, not anyone that I would have called elite or someone that I'd say this is the kind of big-time victory that moves you forward. But she is a serviceable, solid fighter who's been fighting for a little while. Kilholtz is one of the best fighters in the world. She should be coming off of a victory right now. But unfortunately, she's coming off of a decision that did not go her way just because American judges were fooled by just someone doing flash and no consistent, you know, kickboxing work, which is something I'm going to revisit down the road. Sometimes it's happening more and more that they just get enamored with a fun shot rather than consistent kickboxing work. But not the case here. Denise Kilholtz gets the victory. It's just about what they want to do with her. I mean, she's got the look. She's got the fight style. She's going to let her hands go. She's going to, you know, combo and chop. I just don't know what their long-term plans are with her, but I do know that she's got every tool, so put a belt on her or not. They need to figure out something there. Alexandra Negrea gets a victory over Ali Al-Amiri. Again, solid victory there for Negrea. Just a guy who I got to see more from before I can really start hyping him. And then I'll finish the card off with Mustafa Haida, who I've talked about several times before. He gets a victory over Keke Bonin. Extra round decision, so one a little bit tougher than Mustafa might have wanted, but I'm glad that he won because he's another person in that, you know, 77 kg area. He's also as low as, of course, I've seen him, you know, fight at 70 kgs as well. They've got options with him. 70 kgs is probably a better home for him. They've got options with him. He's just got to keep winning, and then they've got to use him in other opportunities. So, Bellator, they might want to consider some tournaments or something, but they've got to do something to get people to follow their athletes more so than, I feel like they've almost moved them like boxers get moved at times, where we're going to pick 4 or 5 athletes and we're going to put them on cards together and they're going to get people they can beat. We need something a little bit different moving forward there. So time will tell, but Bellator Kickboxing gets another event in. I will go ahead and break down. Let's go back to Glory. Glory, it's been, you know, hasn't been forever, but it's been long enough for me to, you know, have to, you know, look at the events full. There were some interesting things in the card. Title changed hands, and then there was the champion being the champion. But I'll go ahead and walk through this card and then talk about the other Glory news. Start off with Francis Imbang. Close fight. Again, Daniel Morales is getting better all the time. He shows, you know, good tools in space, but it's just tough on him because he can't land the kind of shots that hurt people, you know, and that's been the one thing that has plagued him at the weight class. But his kickboxing is still growing, and I think he's doing a good job. Imbang, I didn't think that Imbang had one of his better performances. I think that he let his hands go in spots and, you know, really, you know, those kind of big, as I call them, the sexy shots, the things that judges remember or whatever. I think those carried the day for him. But Daniel Morales is just a little bit too easy to break down what's going to happen in his fights. I wonder if it's even possible that he can make, you know, 154 or 70 kgs because he's got the tools. It's just those guys are just bigger and stronger than him. And when they start throwing heat, even if he blocks it, he takes it tough on the guard because they're so big. So we'll see moving forward what happens with him. But I do like that he's, you know, giving it his best. But Imbang, this was pretty much a repeat of the first fight. Just too big, too strong. Jessica Glassstone gets a majority victory over Daniela Graf. Not sure how it was majority victory. I thought that was pretty clear for Glassstone. She was able to land in flurries a lot with a lot of straight shots down the middle. Taller girl. A lot of things that went right down the pipe. She was a replacement. I believe the... I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I believe this is Zoila Frosto's spot. She was supposed to be here. And yes, so then Glassstone takes Frosto's spot. And they had fought before, her, Glassstone, and Zoila. So I'm glad that they were able to get somebody from the area to kind of fill the spot. But Daniela Graf, again, wouldn't have been one of my choices from, you know, Germany as far as female fighters go. But she was a solid, tough girl who was willing to exchange. This fight was by far the best kickboxing bout that they've had for the Glory brand. For this tournament, this was the best one. The ladies put on the best show here because I thought that they were so willing to exchange, and I thought that Glassstone had these really good moments where she was able to score body kicks and inside leg kicks and just distance shots, but then she put together a flurry of hands that were the real separator. Daniela was game to bite down on the mouthpiece and throw back, but in the end, Jessica Glassstone carried the day with superior offensive connects, and somehow when they went to the scorecards, it was a majority decision instead of a unanimous 30-27 across the board, because that's how I saw it. Nevertheless, Jessica moves on. Ty Lewis Perry gets a second round victory over Anthony McDonald. Here goes the interesting thing about Anthony McDonald. The moment this fight started, Anthony McDonald, look, and this is somebody who works in combat sports. I've been working. I've seen so many people fight. I've so many people in the gym, so many fight events that I've worked, small level, high level. The way Anthony McDonald performed is literally the way people fight when they fight for the first time. Like when they come into the gym and they spar for the first time, that's how Anthony McDonald performed. Like he turned his head away weird. He'd do weird kind of offensive strikes that just they're not combos that you would yell out on for somebody to do on the pad. Just weird kind of, you just kind of have to see it. Like if I were to videotape somebody sparring for the first time and they had this idea of this is how I'm going to score strikes and this is how I'm going to move or whatever, and when I'm not uncomfortable, I'm going to move like this. Anthony McDonald was doing that the first round. He was definitely game to try, I'll tell you that. Like he wanted to try until he realized this was just a little bit too far. Because Ty Lewis Perry did not fight well. I thought Ty Lewis Perry was looking too much to land his clean killer KO. I think that he's got good kickboxing skill, but for whatever reason he didn't use it this time, and I think it's because he was looking for just that one hitter quitter. As soon as he decided to sit down on some shots and not headhunt as much and he was able to drop him with knees, punches and knees. The knees were the thing that really turned the fight, if I remember correctly. One of them, really caught McDonald good. Now, again, McDonald took this fight at a short notice. Shout out to Anthony McDonald for saving the show, you know what I'm saying? Because this didn't have to be the kind of, this fight didn't have to be in the card at all, or maybe they would have found somebody different. But Anthony McDonald just decided that he would step up, take the opportunity on short notice, and I hope they paid him well, because he went out there and he tried until he realized he just wasn't good enough to catch up with the better athlete, Ty Lewis Perry. Chai, again, talented, athletic, Can punch really, really hard. The only problem I'm seeing is he's got to develop some kickboxing consistency. If he doesn't have that, he is going to be in trouble. It is so important that you have that put together, like that you go against better guys, because the guy who's standing on top of the mountain in the heavyweight division can freaking kickbox. He can beat you however you want to get it. So Chai has got to have that. And Chai did a great job of selling the fight later. He got in there with the champion and said, hey, it just takes one shot. He was, you know, got on the mic, called out the champ. And then I said, I'm on Twitter, I said, the guy who I saw perform that day will not beat Rico Verheeven. But he's right. It takes one shot. If he's looking for that one shot, or maybe just bites down and starts throwing, he's got the KO power to get Rico Verheeven out of there. But skill set wise, he's going to have to work on his kickboxing if he wants to beat the reigning king right now. Jason Wellness is your new Glory Middleweight Tournament champion, or excuse me, middleweight, Glory Middleweight champion, as he defeats Simon Marcus in a very, very, very entertaining short fight. It was finished in the third. Basically, round one, Marcus really let his hands go, throwing, you know, big shots, throwing the body kicks. The body kicks were the big winner for him when they fought the three-rounder in Dubai. And he just kept landing them, keeping them off balance. Wellness bit down, you know, tried to block and throw in between, really try to get things going. Wellness got into a flurry. I'm trying to remember correctly. Wellness had earned a standing eight. I didn't think that, if I remember correctly, I can't remember if I liked the first standing eight. But then I think Wellness had got Marcus in trouble enough for me to be like, all right, I'm not going to go too crazy. And then round three happened, and then Marcus just kept getting hit with big shots. There was a period of time, oh, I remember it correctly now. The eight count that they gave to Marcus was because he had spent a period of time just being defensive, hands down, rolling on the ropes. I think he was trying to buy himself some time because he spent some of the early portion of the fight really sitting on heavy shots, maybe looking for that KO. Wellness definitely stayed patient, waited for his opportunity, was able to throw in between, throws really, really hard. Was able to score his low kicks here and there, but the biggest thing was he was able to really get things going with his boxing. And Simon Marcus had this moment where he just played defensive on the ropes, and I didn't know if he was doing it to recover, I didn't know if he was doing it to try to lure Wellness into something, but all he did was just hands down, moving and shoulders, and just nothing significant scored in my mind, but the moment the ref separated them, he decided to go with a count. And that count was, I was like, wow, that's really big. You're down on the cards after round two. Gonna have to come back with a big round three. Round three is when he took the big shot. It was a right hand. And then, of course, he was able to put together several swarms, and he was able to get a TKO on the round by dropping him several times. It was what you want the two best middleweights in the world to do, put on a very entertaining fight. They showed high-level skill. They both showed their styles. But Wellness definitely able to sit down and throw that heat, willing of, or deserving of being the champion. The dude worked really, really hard and, you know, didn't complain. And he had some losses here and there, kept going. I like the tournament field that they got coming up because it's got what could possibly be the challenger to this, you know, to Wellness. But man, shout out to Wellness. Stayed in the game, kept working hard. He is your middleweight champion. Gonna go ahead and move into what was the main card. Gonna go ahead and say I was dead wrong in a couple things. Number one, dead wrong about Matt Emery, but we'll get into that full here in a second. So Giga Chikadze gets victory over Sahir Adamchuk. It was close, could have gone either way. Chikadze was again able to land what I would consider the sexier shots, the flash, whereas Sahir Adamchuk was able to land clean kick, you know, consistent kickboxing. He always runs people into the left hand, has a good counter left hand, played with shots here and there, but Giga just kind of kept that flash on him, you know, and he would score and then he'd do some sort of kick or some sort of something. And then when they went to the cards, I was like, you know, Sahir Adamchuk won this for me, but I can see Giga getting the victory if I remember it correctly. But I felt very confident that I thought Giga was going to get it on the cards despite what Adamchuk did. When they went to the cards, that's what carried the day. The flash carried the day. And something that I saw on the earlier card, I wasn't a big fan of that. But we'll get into it a little bit more, how much I didn't like this sort of thing. Matt Embry then comes out and gets a huge KO over Chaibin Lim. It was like, it was the second down in the round, if I remember correctly, was like at the bell. But he got him hurt, dropped him with his hands, and then, you know, landed. I want to say it was an overhand right at the bell. I can't remember exactly, but I remember thinking, okay, Matt Embry, I've known you to be, you know, I thought that Embry was going to, whoever won this fight was going to lose in the tournament. I was wrong. Matt Embry won this fight by KO, and he won the next fight by KO over Giga. But he just showed me more power. I thought that Embry was a guy who, I've seen Embry, you know, stop before, stop to the body, if I'm remembering correctly. I've seen him, you know, fight elite guys, Sanchai, stuff like that, whatever. Matt Embry is a tough, good fighter. I remember, I think I even made the mistake one time of confusing him from another Canadian fighter when I was breaking him down one time. That's how much he just kind of stood in my mind as a, oh, he's a good, tough guy, but not a guy who I think would be at the top or notable or someone to really pay attention to. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Matt Embry came out and showed KO pop that I did not know that he had. And he really woke me up to his skill set and the things that he can do in there when he performs. Big time victory over Chaibin Lim and a big victory over Giga Chikadze. And I'll talk about it a little bit more when I talk about the ratings, because the ratings were really good for this. The, you know, did, I think they did 518, you know, 500,000, 518,000. Go ahead and add the fact that as I'm watching it, you know, Karl Anthony Towns is the number one pick of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and he just happened to be watching ESPN. And he was watching the fight card, and he started talking about the fight card. And he started saying that this Matt Embry kid can punch really hard, and that kind of stuff. And it's really cool when you're on a major network, when you've got a live show, and someone's just churning the channel, and they go to ESPN to see what's going on. And then this is the product you got on, and Matt Embry is knocking people out. You could not ask for anything better if you're the Glory brand. For somebody to just get introduced to it at the right time, where somebody's getting absolutely murked in there. Not to mention, your champion did his thing. But shout out to Matt Embry. Two big-time KO victories. Overhand right in Giga. Left hooks that dropped Chaibin Lim. Let's see what happens moving forward with Matt Embry. But definitely big-time win. And I couldn't have been more wrong. I did not have him winning this four-man tournament field. I thought the winner was going to come from Giga. And see here, Adamczyk. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Matt Embry knocking people out. We're going to move on to another frustrating moment for me. Guda Inocente gets a majority decision victory over Hezzy Higgins. I just don't see how this can be. And here's my problem. Hezzy clearly landed the consistent kickboxing throughout. In all three rounds, the guy who was scoring the most combinations with his hands and effective scores with his legs is Hezzy Higgins. Not even close. Guda Inocente pretty much threw no consistent offense, but every once in a while he'd try something flashy, spinning back kick or spinning, you know, back fist, something like that, whatever. So when they go to the cards, I'm like, please tell me you guys were not fooled by the fact that this guy was not landing consistent offense throughout, and he was only looking to throw something flash here and there. Fooled. Fooled again. And the worst thing is, when this happens, there's some judge out there telling me that, you know, the way you watch it as a spectator and the way you watch it as a, judge is different. And this is one of those examples where I'm like, well, as a spectator, it makes complete sense to me, or more sense to me, that the guy landing consistent offense is Hezzy Higgins. It's so clear to me that this is the guy landing the consistent offense. So if you're saying that, no, you're wrong, the spinning techniques that aren't even necessarily landing against Hezdy are worth so much that they overdo consistent kickboxing scores, you're killing me with that. You're killing me with that. It's just, it wasn't even a close fight in my mind. It was so clear that Hezdy Higgins won the fight. Guda Inocente, to just move around and do something spinning and get your hands raised without even landing it. Because if you land something spinning, people are gone. You know what I'm saying? Guda, of course, had the big one over Dennis earlier in the year. But since that moment, that stuff ain't been landed. You know, like it ain't been, it makes you wonder what would have happened in that fight if it didn't land. You know what I'm saying? Would he have just kept trying it? Would you have given him the victory because he keeps trying it? So we'll see moving forward. Rigo Vahirin absolutely dominates Anderson Broderick Silva. Now he's better. So we always knew that he was better. We knew that he's a champion. But I'm telling you, he's the combinations, the down that he scored with the head kick, the down that he scored with the low kicks, he's our champ. He's the man. He's the guy to beat. He comes into this fight with an awesome, excellent performance, and you're like, this guy's going to go against Badahari. Badahari, the thing before I would say is that Rico could be caught and he could go down because early in his career, he had been stopped several times. You know, Ben Sadiq's got a KO victory over him, which just like boggles the mind. But Sadiq had that kind of game plan, that kind of style. Now, again, Anderson Broderick Silva, he's also lost to Sadiq. He's got to kind of win a few, lose a few kind of thing that's going on forever. Losses to Gita, but, you know, wins over Remy Wendowski, like stuff like that. So him getting in here and him performing to the best of his ability, but still coming up woefully short, doesn't bother me. I know Broderick Silva put the work in the gym. Just Rico's at the head of his game right now. The biggest thing for me moving forward is how do we get Rico out there even more? Because, of course, MMA guys, he had the one MMA fight. They're trying to throw him money and that kind of stuff, whatever. And then Bellator's offering him money, of course, to do their kickboxing brand and the MMA as well. They could do anything with Rico. His mic skills are great. Like, Rico can really interview well. He's more at home with English than anybody that I think I've seen on a major kickboxing scene. It's just natural to him. When they put that mic on him, when I asked him about the kickboxing documentary and I was asking him questions after he'd won the tournament, I interviewed him right after he beat Saki and Gita in that four-man tournament. So after that happened and I'm talking to him, I'm like, wow, it's amazing to me how well this guy's answering these questions. They just came off easy. He is the right kind of person to be the champion of the world as we're trying to make the brand grow in America. So Glory had their best ratings, had their first live show, so you're watching it happen, you know, no delay really on this one, and the eyes are on it, and it does its best ratings. Now you just got to build on it. The next tournament, really, really good. The middleweight tournament, they got solid. The championship that they got, featherweight, solid stuff there. It should be exciting what we got coming forward in the kickboxing world and the Glory doing good things. Clearly, I'm hoping that they find a venue that has a few more butts in the seat because that's the only thing that we are missing. We're not getting that crowd, you know, and that makes me say, hey, let's do Europe again, you know, so we get that crowd back. But those ratings were huge, and we're not going to get the ratings because no one's going to be around to watch it on a Friday afternoon, and Saturday afternoon football dominates all. So they're going to have to try to figure out how to make that happen with the European product and live shows. But as far as this night, it came together very, very well for Glory, one of their better kickboxing offerings and one of their better kickboxing results as far as what happened in the action. You know, we're talking KO, KO, KO. You get rid of the Gute and Asante mess, and you really had a flawless card as far as main card and TV goes. Going to go ahead and move into, I'll throw a couple of news things your way. John Wayne Parr is going to be fighting for Bellator in kickboxing. That's a lot of fun. They got to match him up the right way. There are some older guys out there. I think that would make some solid matchups for him. I'm happy that he's looking to compete and he's still able to make money. It's just, you know, it's just crazy. You know, 2017, John Wayne Parr still out there, you know, doing it. It's nuts. So I'm super happy for him. And again, they got to match him the right way. Clearly, he's, you know, going to fight whoever they want to put in front of him. But, you know, John Wayne Parr versus Raymond Daniels ain't the fight to make right now. You know, the fight to make is a fight where, you know, maybe he gets a guy who pushes him in a way where he can use his skill set and that guy can use his skill set. There are some of those old guard guys that are, you know, still coaching and working gyms that used to be elite fighters back in the day. They're older too. Maybe he should fight one of those types on their card. You know, again, it's always going to be based on where they do the kickboxing brand, where they have the fight event. But if they do the fight event in, you know, Europe, Fadi Mir is the type, is the kind of guy that you want to go after. So We'll see what comes from it, but shout out to John Wayne Parr. Really, really happy that that happened for him. K1 is making a return trip to Europe as they are planning a 95kg tournament. It's going to go down October 27th. I saw one of the guys mention, but I'm going to go ahead and wait till the tournament field comes out. But K1 Global, coming back into the question, it's interesting because they were the ones that had the Bukau event that didn't go that well, you know. So the one with him and Kiel, and you know, we knew that they were out there, but you know, they know the K1 name still has value because there are still K1 events all over Europe. It's considered K1 rules. I don't care if you know Glory's there or not. It's considered K1 rules, not Glory rules. It's just a very, very famous brand, and we'll see what comes from it down the road. I'm excited that this is happening, and hopefully the right fighters get the right opportunities and they put on a really good show. But there's some really talented guys around 95 kgs. I'm just hoping that we get some notable names in there, not just the, you know, who they say or who they use from the area. If they just do that, that would just absolutely take them nowhere forward. They've got to have some recognizable international talent, or else the tournament is for naught. Next thing I'm going to talk about is Bushiroad creates Knockout. Knockout's going to try to be the next kickboxing, you know, let's go ahead. They're not going to take over kickboxing, but they give more opportunities that we talked about before for kickboxers to make money as prize fighters. So we got Glory, we got K1, K1 Japan, I should say. And then K1 Europe, K1 Global is kind of K1, what's happening in K1 Europe. Super Combat, Kunlun, there are others from China that I can't think of right now. The opportunities are there, and this is another one for them to make money, or for you to make money as a prize fighter. Now, again, if it's going to be in Japan, and I guess what it is they're taking over No Kick, No Life. And, of course, that had, you know, Muay Thai as well. So it's going to be kickboxing, but I think they're going to allow elbows. And people don't know this, but in the early K1, they allowed elbows. I don't think they allowed them to the head. I think they allowed elbows to the body, but nobody ever did it. But, like, they had a little bit more lax rule on clinch in the beginning. So we'll see what they do with this. You know, Bushiroad, of course, is known right now in Japan for what it's done with wrestling, you know, and helping pushing that brand and, you know, really, New Japan is the wrestling organization. They've done a good job of making things household. So this is kind of the next move. They want to make kickboxing household again. There's a trailer out there if you guys want to check it out. It's on Liver Kick. We'll see what happens. I'm always in favor of more kickboxing opportunities. Their first card is got Takayuma Imanari as he goes against Yoshihiro Nagashima, or Jinutsu, the one that dresses up as the female anime character. He's on that card, so it's just in the beginning stages, just some names. Genji Inume, Omeno, excuse me, Tenshin, Nasukawa, just some names to mention that's on the card that we'll see what happens with who they get matched up with, but those names ain't taking over the kickboxing world, so we'll just see what happens down the road. But definitely good stuff there. Gonna go ahead and go back to the results world, as we had a Nether and Fusion card that just brought it as usual, because it's always really, really cool, and another close, entertaining fight. But I did think their winner was correct, between Typhoon Oskin and Muhammad Jiraiya. So go ahead and go into this whole card. Sheena Wintershuvin loses her title. She's had it, I want to say she won it a year ago. She loses it to Nayat Hasanonoi. Excuse me, I'm pronouncing her name in Hasanoini. And then Aloy. The last name is Aloy for sure. I know I'm messing up that middle name there. My apologies. But the Alaoi is the girl who is, you know, the new Infusion champion. I wasn't able to catch this fight. I've seen Alaoi fight once before. Wasn't able to pronounce her middle name then either. But she's a talented girl, and of course, Moroccan, as you can imagine, because there's so many male Moroccan kickboxers, and because there's such a huge Moroccan community in France and in Holland, they're going to be around stand-up fighting. So you're going to see more and more female athletes joining the male athletes in the kickboxing world, in the way that you have a lot of Sierranese athletes in Holland and so on. Ismael Lazar gets a second-round KO victory over, I'm going to mess this one up, Shekim Ademaj from Germany. I think I did better than I thought there. He gets a KO in that second round. Of course, Ismael Lazar trying to get himself in a position where he can beat elite guys, because he lost to Jafar Wilmus, and I'm sure that meant a lot to him to get that victory, but Wilmus really just out-kickboxed him. Good stuff by Lazar, getting back in there, getting focused, keep competing, and then the opportunities will come. We head into next fight, 72.3. I think this is I have tournament final here. Aziz Kala gets a first-round KO victory over Cedric De Kishmaker. This is huge for me because I've been big on Aziz Kala for a while. I know he's always had the potential to score big kind of shots and get KOs. He's always shown it. I've seen it with jumping knees. I've seen it with hooks. I've seen it with the weird style that Lucien plays with, where Lucien can have you be a fluent kickboxer with combination kicks, and then he can be a guy who plays with angles and sharp knees and different directions and that kind of deal, whatever. He's always shown this to me. The thing that's always been on the confusing side for me is Aziz Kala can somehow consistently stuffs his own offense. He'll be trying to hit you so much, or he'll be so aggressive that he ends up in the clinch a lot, and he never lets the space of letting his hands score happen enough. But today, he was able to get those big hands scored. As I said before, the tournament final, I don't have the whole tournament field in my recollection, but the winner got 10,000 euros, so go ahead and bank that, Aziz Kala. Congratulations. Let's see what happens with your career as it moves forward. Ibrahim Albastadi gets a victory over Philip Verlinden. Albastadi is very talented. Philip Verlinden is just a guy who, he's got the tools to be one of the better kickboxers in the world. He just doesn't have the consistency, you know. He has a legit victory over Israel Adesanya. Like, he definitely won that fight that they had when they met in the glory, you know, in the glory ring. But, you know, since then, just, you know, I'd say he's been a consistent losing streak since then. Maybe a win here and there, but it just hasn't come together. We're talking about a guy who once competed at super heavyweight, then you know, 93 kgs, and that's, of course, where he's got the loss to Tyrone Spong. And then he went all the way down, so you're thinking, you know, he's tall for the weight class. One of these times he's going to be able to put it together. But he'll beat a Melvin Menhoff, but then he'll lose to the types of guys that, you know, that he wants to get the victories off of. He clearly wants to get wins off of your, you know, Artem Levens, your Simon Marcus's, but it just hasn't come his way. Ibrahim Albastadi is one of the brand fighters one of the Infusion fighters that's been pushed. They say Infusion contracted fighters. Ibrahim Albastadi has got one of those little videos. It's because he's a talented guy, good fan base in Morocco. I want to see more of him moving forward. Definitely some glory guys that he can beat, but we'll see. Talented kid. Next fight I'm going to talk about is Christ Basuku getting a victory over Yane Risco. Again, this is in the tournament field at 72.5 kgs. Now, again, the way they've been doing this, it's almost like, think about it in terms of bracketing for, like, soccer league, you know, in terms of you get this kind of win, KO gets you more. Christ Basuku, if I remember correctly, he's one of the guys that's in that tournament, him and Yane Risco of Spain. Risco, of course, is in because he got the upset victory over Andy Sauer last year. Christ Basuku wins us an extra round. I like Christ. He's a guy who I first got introduced to him because he used to fight on Thai Fight back when Thai Fight was going to France and so on. And, of course, you know, Nasser Kassem, those guys are Muay Thai first. Christ Basuku has been able to, you know, use his length and, you know, still score effective offense. He still gets to fight Yakao, so he gets to fight full rules Muay Thai there. But really he's just known as a solid kickboxer, excuse me, a solid Muay Thai fighter who's doing good work in kickboxing here and there. Him getting a victory over Yanni Risco goes a long way. He moves forward in the tournament field. He's got that victory. Risco's going to have to dig himself out of the hole because I believe it's six fighters, and then they tally up the scores, and then you just do a tournament with the last few guys. Which takes us to the main event. Muhammad Jiraiya and Tayfun Askin once again put on a great fight. I think Tayfun Askin has figured out that he is the stronger of the fighters, and he can just sit on just smooth combo flow here and there. Muhammad Jiraiya, he still throws his offense, but he didn't play with kicks as much this time as he did really focused on trying to throw around Tayfun Askin's guard. So he'll kind of loop his punches, and he's done it before. I mean, he's done it a lot. Dry will throw straight, and then he'll throw his looping shot. But his looping shots, even if you got the earmuffs on, he'll still try to sneak it around, you know, under the thumb of the glove or around the side or, you know, just middle and around. And he plays it up, looks to sneak a sneaky knee in there. Askin kind of figured him out defensively. You know, Askin starts to throw his combos. He's just so clean. Like, everything is clean and strong and tight. He wins this one, so he's now ahead in their series as far as who's the better of each other. He now leads it 2-1. Now, again, the first time they met, both guys were fresh. Muhammad Jiraiya wins an extra round. His kicking offense took over, and his volume took over late in the fight. Askin, of course, got a wounded guy in the second one, as Muhammad Jiraiya had pretty much used all the energy in his body to get through Ben No. So then when they met this time, again, fresh bodies, just the better kickboxer turned out to be Tayfun Askin. He gets the victory here. Excited for him, hoping to see more of him moving down the road. And then I'll go ahead and wrap this card up by talking about Nordin Benmo, who I mentioned before. He takes on Sergio Canters. That's the other guy in the 72.5 kg tournament. So 160 pounds to those who are in the States. Nordin Benmo gets a victory over Sergio Canters, which means after that first one, our seeding is Basuku, Askin, Benmo, those guys, Zizkala. Those are the guys who got the victories over that. Now, again, I'm not 100% on the Zizkala being in that tournament field, but I do see 72.5. So I wondered if he gotten in. But for the most part, fun stuff. I am not a big fan, I mentioned it before, of Infusion going to their pay stream. I think it takes from them. They should just have it live, get their shows out there as much as possible. I couldn't imagine they're making that much money off of. They're kind of trying to have like a Fight Pass type deal, but they don't have enough elite stars for people to follow their brand in that way. In particular, if Glory and K1 are bigger brands than you and they're allowing all their content to be shown and picked up, it's going to be tough for you to catch them with that. I understand what you're trying to do, but definitely we'll see what happens down the road. But Infusion, great, great job. Let me see. I guess I can mention a couple other notables. Kunlun had a fight over the past. Kunlun 52 went down. I'll mention some fights from the card. We got Zhang Shuyi gets a victory over Kim Hotwa. That is at 67 kgs. Anatoly Moiseev gets a victory over Tomas Izoria. Wasn't one of the better performances by Anatoly. Talented guy. Of course, you guys know I think the sky's the limit for him. He really could be one of the best fighters in the world. Got the victory over Jonsi. Very talented kid. You know, the pressure of Gregorian affected him, but I think that he's back in the game. Very talented guy. I'm excited to see what happens to him down the road. But this wasn't one of his better offerings. But between fighting in China and fighting for glory, he's getting a lot of opportunities to compete. And he's growing as an athlete every day. Ekaterina Vandereva is a girl who I've mentioned before. Talented, and they really have been promoting her because she's pretty. She gets a victory, an extra round victory over Ren Kalin. So she's been promoted as not just being pretty, but as the sexiest person in their division. So I think even they've caught on to, okay, if they're hot, we really got to try to get them out there. Ekaterina, I've seen her fight before. I've seen her have some good fights, and I've seen her, you know, struggle against some better girls. Good victory for her, 52.5 kgs. Not really. It's a tough weight class if you look at who it could mean her fighting down the road. But I'm fine with it. But I don't see her beating, you know, the girls that she would meet around the, you know, the Barlows and the Mexans of the world or whatever. But she can beat some solid girls, and good win for her here. Tavik Kyria gets a victory over Zinias Zuev. Kyria has really had these opportunities, and he's won some and he's lost some. But I'm really hoping that he's able to get some consistency enough for him to get the opportunity to fight in K1 again, or excuse me, in Glory again down the road, or even K1 60K or their 70KD tournament. Kyria is a good guy, works hard, trains hard. He just ran into, if he gets frustrated, he starts doing his jumping spin kick, and then everybody knows, all right, you lost. I'm glad that he's pushed that out of his mind and he's got back to it. Satni Rogova gets a victory over Ashati of China, TKO in the first round. Rogova is a guy I've mentioned before in the show. He's fought for the, out of Ukraine, he's fought for them before. Andrei Gruzmanchuk gets a victory over Atha Kasapis of Greece. Gruzmanchuk, as we mentioned before, they keep saying this stuff about, you know, Rico Verhaeren being undefeated. It is not so. Gruzmanchuk has got a victory over him last year in January. It seems like a million years ago, but it happened, even though the Glory doesn't seem to acknowledge that it happened. They just mentioned that he's undefeated under Glory in the last yada, 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 yada. Give Gruzmanchuk an opportunity. You want your best fight in the world to do it. Gruzmanchuk wins this fight and then goes on to get an extra round victory over Rogova. I think if they fought again, I would clearly go without hesitation with Rico Verhaeren. But I think Gruzmanchuk has earned that opportunity. So I'm hoping that Andre gets that call up and we get to see him against the highest level of kickboxer in the world. He's got that victory, short notice fight. Oh, well, it wasn't a short notice fight, but a fight that Rico took for money, and he was in a weird spot, and everything didn't go well for him. Matters not to Gruzmanchuk, who dropped him twice, dropped him with something spinning. I think there was a knee in there. Shout out to Rico for getting up, and then Rico fought to the end, but he ended up losing in the cards. Rico's still my guy. I love that guy. But I think that there is some unfinished business. He's got to get that victory at some period of time. So, I think I'm going to wrap the show up with that. I mean, there are some other events that took place in China. But I'll go ahead and wrap the show up with that. I think I gave us a little bit of everything. So, I'm just playing it off in my head. I got Kunlun, I got Glory, I got K1. I got Infusion all on one show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I'm doing my best. I'm going to have to get back on my game, get into the stadium fighting again. I know there's been some really big stuff to happen, but between opening and running my own gym and between preparing my, you know, my fighter for her world title fight coming up here, I've just been crazy, crazy busy. So my apologies. Hope you guys enjoy this show. God bless, and thank you for following me because I really do love kickboxing, and I'm glad that you guys have been on this ride with me. So thanks again, everybody. Peace.